This is WABF.
And it's time now for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomanosi, president of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, including the Shell gas stations in Daphne on 98 and in Malbus on 181 with a state-of-the-art car wash. And good morning, Dr. Lou.
Well, good morning to you, Laurie. It's certainly good to see you. Another great Alabama morning.
It's beautiful.
I guess it's a great morning just to be alive.
Yes,
so
it is.
So here we are. And, of course, being alive means we've got to contend with all sorts of issues. And, of course, last week had a lot of issues. Some of them were good, some of them bad. What I'd like to do today is talk about what is going on with, you know, the elections that we saw. Okay, that's important. But I also want to talk a little bit about some other issues pertaining to some of the morning talk shows on Sunday morning that have to do with a little bit with foreign policy, as I always do. I also want to make mention of the fact that the Durham investigation continues. For all of you out there who were skeptical of all this, it is going on. I'll talk a little bit about that. And then I want to talk about our special election, okay? I mean, the special session that we just finished here.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got a really great guest coming on, Stephanie Dernan, who is the co-director of Health Freedom Alabama. She's been on before.
And when is she going to
She's
be joining
coming
us?
On at about 10:15,
okay?
Okay? So God willing that the phone works, okay? So we'll see how this goes. So Stephanie and I are going to talk a little bit about the special session, some of the things that took place, that didn't take place, her views of the sausage making and some major problems with it. But first, let's get to the Durham report first, okay? I know that the elections in Virginia, that's all great. I mean, everyone's happy about that. But the critical thing for our law and order democracy is for Durham to send some of these people to jail who fabricated the whole argument about Trump being in collusion with the Russians. The fact of the matter is, as we continue to see, is that it's the Clinton campaign that was in collusion with the Russians. Worse than that, though, is the fact that the FBI, either willfully or by stupidity, went to the FISA courts asking for FISA warrants to spy on the Trump campaign in the fall of 2016. And by that time, most people who understood what was going on knew that the Steele dossier was horse manure, okay? Notice I said horse manure,
thank
Laurie.
Thank you.
Keeping you happy here. Okay, so what does all that mean? It means that the FBI is institutionally responsible for some real problems. One guy has already been called out for that, but he got his hands slapped. There's more to this going on, and I'm going to keep us informed on it because we have got to rein in and the FBI from doing the kinds of things that we saw happen to the Trump campaign. We've got to. All right, let's talk about the happy talk here. What happened with the whole business with the Virginia election? The importance of it. The fact of the matter is that a blue state, for all practical purposes, was turned red. Why? And here's where, you know, depending upon the Democrats' play on this, well, you know, Biden didn't get his agenda through, and that really threw things off. Well, that's another horse maneuver statement, too. The fact of the matter is, parents in Virginia saw what their kids were being taught in the classrooms with critical race theory, and they revolted. They also saw the Loudoun County superintendent pretend that he didn't know about a rape in a school and had the parent who was challenging them on this thrown in jail. That just did not sit well. On top of that, the fact is that the kid who did the rape originally was transferred. Now, get this now, was transferred to another school and repeated it with another sexual assault. So, I mean, these kinds of things just blew up in Terry McAuliffe's face. along with the fact that Terry McAuliffe himself was a terrible candidate once again. He was a terrible candidate 10 years ago when he ran. Okay, I understand that. But you can't go on a debate and say, hey, parents don't have a right to anything that that their children can learn in school. Well, that just threw gas on the fire and just made it that much easier for Youngin to take charge with it. I would say, just as importantly as what happened in Virginia, Minneapolis, they did not go down the road of defunding the police. They lost that whole change the police to reimagining to something else, some public whatever. Okay, police are police. And you know why they couldn't pass that? Because the crime rates have spiked, whether it's Minneapolis, whether it's Spokane, Washington, whether it's, you know, Portland, Oregon, which also defeated a defund the police attempt. Okay? So the progressives, and I hate to use the word progressives, they're not progressives. They're called progressives by the press, but they are socialist communists for all practical purposes. So let's just say what they are. They have gone too far, and even the Democrats are starting to walk away from all of this so-called progressive stuff. So we'll see how far that goes. I do think, though, that, you know, elite control of these schools has been challenged, okay? And I am hoping that we can challenge Common Core here in Alabama, because it is the education elites who want it, along with the Business Council of Alabama, who have funded it. And we are in the process of challenging it today. We have Jim Ziegler on the radio in Montgomery asking people to call Governor Ivey. And I'll give you the number, 334-242-7100. Call her and tell her you want Common Core gone.
334-242-7100.
Exactly. It's time to do this, folks. We're number 52 in the nation in the NAEP scores for, and that's your national report card, 52nd in math, and 48th in English language arts. The Parker people, this is your public research community, came out with another one of their reports that basically was showing that only 14% of our eighth graders were able to pass the newest test that the state education department has come out with. So what exactly more do we need to learn about this? So my sense here is that, you know, we've got all of those things going with us, and we also have the fact that we've got major problems with foreign policy, which, you know, I've continued to talk about. So whether it's the Afghanistan debacle, whether it's questions about, you know, what we're doing with Iran, what goes on with China, all of those kinds of things are still percolating. And I think it's important for us to keep talking about it. And I'll certainly do that. And next week, I want to do a little bit more on the foreign policy end of it. But since today, we do have all of these major issues domestically, and we've got this important state issue that has gone on that I did want to talk to you, as I mentioned earlier. Well, Stephanie, thank you for coming on. Good morning this morning.
Hey, good morning, Dr. Lee. Thanks for having me.
Okay. Just so everyone knows, Stephanie Dernan is the co-director of Alabama Health Freedom. She's been on this show before, and I'm certainly glad that she's back on today, because we had a major event take place in the special session where a bill that Stephanie didn't support did pass, but her bill, HB 31, did have a lot of promise, and I want to talk to her about that, along with a couple of other things. So, Stephanie, thank you for coming on. I really do appreciate it. So let's just start with why do you think the legislators did something about this whole question about forcing people to get a vaccine or lose their job. What brought them about to deal with this problem?
You know, it's been boiling up for quite a number of weeks now, and the first day of special session, we actually had a Save Our Jobs rally on the front steps of the State House, where we had between 300 and 400 people show up at the State House for the first day of special session, angry and demanding that our legislators do something because our governor had failed so miserably in that attempt with her executive order. And we had a Jericho march right around that State House 7 times, and there were so many people. For those that don't know, the Alabama State House encompasses an entire city block. And there were so many people that the line continuously encircled the State House without ends and without gaps.
That's outstanding.
It was incredible to see.
Yeah. Tell us why you did the 7 laps around the State House.
Well, I'm sure our listeners are familiar with Jericho in the Bible. It was just important to show our legislators that this was something so important that we were given this issue to God for him to move mountains in this arena. And he did, because everybody, when they got done with that walk, we had between 300 to 400 people walk through the front doors of the State House and go and find their legislators for their appointments that they had already made with them to talk to them about this issue that was so important with them.
Well, so to boil it right down, the grassroots movement responded to your calls, and the reaction was outstanding, and the impact was also very important. And I would suggest that, you know, that sort of an effort that you made with the success you had, and even though you didn't get the bill that you wanted, which we'll talk about in a second, it seems to me that that's just an indication that, you know, you and Health Freedom are on the right track to mobilize the state towards the kinds of ends that you see are important going forward in various health issues, as well as other issues, for sure. So tell us a little bit about your bill, HB 631, and tell us a little bit about the one that passed and why you think your bill was better and what you're going to do in the future once January comes around.
Mm-hmm. Well, Health Freedom Alabama, with Representative Richie Horton, filed HB 31 on October 1st. And what the Alabama Health Freedom Act, which is what it was called, did was it created a protected class of individuals so that you could not discriminate against somebody based upon their vaccination status. It is the strongest bill and provided the most amount of freedom and liberty for every person in the state of Alabama. What the legislators came up with was Senator Chris Elliott's bill, SB 9, and that only afforded some people some protection. And I would argue it didn't even do that, because SB 9 doesn't provide you with any further protections that is already afforded you by the federal government when it comes to exemptions from vaccinations according to either medical reasons or religious reasons.
So
Health Freedom Alabama is always going to push for the most amount of freedoms for the most amount of people in Alabama.
Right, and I think we all understand that. So in the end, I know that you had texted me that it looked as though you had the votes, the 2/3 that were necessary for HB 31. What happened there, which I think it's important for everyone to understand the sausage-making process, because it's so similar to the same problems that we have encountered in getting rid of Common Core. So take us through that if you can, Stephanie.
Mm-hmm. HB 31 had to be refiled in the special session, so it got a new number, but it stayed the same. So then it became known as HB 9. And we had the votes in the House for HB 9 to pass with 2/3 of the vote. And if it would have made it to the floor for a vote, it would have passed. Now, what we saw in the hallways was absolutely sickening. It was disheartening. You know, you always hear how much power the lobbyists have over our representatives and over our legislators and over our senators, but until you see it actually happen before your very eyes, you really just don't understand how much sway they have. We saw lobbyists in the hallways of our state house chewing out lawmakers, ripping them to shreds, up one way, down the other. And then in the next hallway, they walk over there and pat some on the back and say, good job, good job. You're doing what we want. Thanks so much. BCA appreciates you.
Well, there's nothing new about that, that's for sure. We certainly remember Billy Canary, who was the president of the Business Council of Alabama, going up and doing exactly that, you know, making it very clear that the BCA called the shots, and if you dared cross them, well, you are going to pay the price for it, which turns out to be the price being you're not going to get the campaign donations that they give out to keep their legislative agenda moving forward. Now, it's obvious that those kinds of things are, you know, part of the process, may not be the nicest looking thing, but it certainly is part of the process. But there is one thing that you saw that you told me about that was particularly troubling. You want to go into that for us?
There was one part in the hallway of the State House where one particular legislator is getting his back all padded by the BCA, and he told them, and I'm going to say David Cole with the BCA, who is their lobbyist, said, yes, we want those amendments put on that bill. We want this to go to conference committee. We want this to die in conference committee. But, you know, when we come out in public, we're going to have to openly oppose what you're doing, just so you know. You know, they pull out those back room shenanigans all the time, and they were popping in and out of those offices, and it was just very troubling because you elect your representatives to go to Montgomery to stand strong against that type of lobbying behavior from those big organizations. And I'm not sure the vast majority of them have the integrity and the ability to stand strong against that type of pressure.
Yeah, I mean, internal fortitude is the term that's required when you're dealing with that. But tell me another troubling thing that you related, and that's these lobbyists were participating in the Republican caucus, if I'm not mistaken. And you weren't allowed to be sitting in there at the same time they were.
Oh, the conference committee. Oh, yeah, lobbyists are allowed at the table at the conference committee.
I mean, you know, that's just another one of these outrageous approaches that have crept into the system without challenge, as far as I know. To tell you the truth, it's the first time that I've heard that, but that doesn't mean anything. I mean, you know, whether I knew it or didn't know it, the important part of it is that if they're going to do that with the lobbyists, then I think we need to press forward to make sure that the rules are such that if the lobbyists are going to be there, then grassroots organizers who are involved with any particular issue should be able to sit there too. I mean, I think we can put our heads together and come up with a plan to deal with that. Don't you? I mean,
mm-hmm.
You know, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's important that we have.
It's almost like an open meeting
everybody
law.
Everybody can see.
You know?
Is open and open to scrutiny.
You know, so I think that's another one of these agenda items that we really need to kind of take a close look at going forward to make sure that everyone is represented when they're doing their deals behind closed doors and in the smoke-filled rooms. What the hell is the difference between smoke-filled rooms of the past and what they're doing today? Seems like it sort of sounds like the same thing. So Stephanie, having seen this, and of course you're from Louisiana, which Louisiana has its own issues with you know, state government, okay? So you've been exposed to Alabama's approach to things. And knowing what you now know, what's the game plan going forward in January? How do you think you want to approach things in January when the legislators come back to a regular session?
Well, you know, we still maintain that the core issue is discrimination based upon vaccination status, and we really want people to understand that your legislators passed SB 9, which is a largely castrated bill that is purely for ceremonial purposes and offers you no further protection than you were already given by the federal government and those exemptions that were allowed. And so every time you have an employer tell you, hey, you need to be tested for COVID now every 48 hours at your own expense, we want you to call your legislators, your representatives and your senators and say, I'm being discriminated against. And it's because you failed to act and pass HB 31/HB 9. Every time you have an employee who has to wear a different type of badge to indicate their vaccination status, we want those people to call their lawmakers and say, I'm being discriminated against, and you had a chance to do something about it, and you failed. Every time we have an employee who is given different health benefits by their employer because of their vaccination status, we want you to call your lawmakers and say, I'm being discriminated against, and it's because you failed to do something about this.
So,
we have situations where we have nurses who are being forced to eat in their basement. And I would say to those nurses, we want you to call your lawmakers and tell them that you're being discriminated against. And it's because your lawmakers failed to act in the appropriate way and pass HB 31, also known as HB 9.
So as it stands right now, Representative Horton is going to go ahead and reintroduce that bill, refile it as, I guess, HB 31 or whatever the number is going to be, but it's going to include those kinds of, you know, opposition to those sorts of discriminatory practices that you talked about. Is there anything else that's going to be included in that you've learned from this particular experience with this?
No, our bill won't change at all.
Okay.
We still maintain that it is solid. It is well written. It has been looked at and approved by constitutional attorneys. It has been said that legislation could be a model legislation for other states. So we fully intend on bringing this back in January. And by then, we're going to have a bunch of people who understand how SB 9 actually did not offer them any other protections than they were already given. And they're going to be angry about that.
Well, I think SB 9's real approach is that it shifts the burden onto the employee who has been harmed by this whole the process where, okay, you're being fired, so you have, what, a 30-day window to, you have to apply, you have to turn in your form that basically says, here's why this is wrong, and then it goes to the State Department of Labor, and then it's adjudicated with someone who is going to be in judgment of it. And if that fails, my understanding is it will go to a local circuit court. Is that basically how you see this?
Well, when an employer wants to terminate you because of your vaccination status, they have to request permission from the Department of Labor. And that will go to a new position that is being formed by state law inside of the Department of Labor called an administrative law judge, and they will make a determination if your employer is allowed to fire you based upon your vaccination status or the exemption that you have filed. And then if the employee is subsequently terminated because of their exemption, the employee then has an opportunity to file
an appeal
on that in whatever jurisdiction they live in.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's an onerous process that essentially puts the burden of proof on the employee who's being fired. And we've already had people fired down here in Baldwin County. We know that. And so the question really about your constitutional rights gets subsumed into a process question where it's better, in their view, with SB 9, to deal with it in this fashion rather than in coming out and saying employers cannot discriminate on the basis of race, gender, and, you know, whatever else, religion, and vaccine status would then be the appropriate way to approach this. So it seems to me that you're on the right track with that, and I just hope that we can, you know, push it through the next time, Stephanie. So,
you know. Well, we certainly have the people to do that. It has really turned into a massive effort. I'm so proud of everybody who rose up and stood up and made those calls and talked to their representatives and talked to their senators and told them how these mandates were affecting their lives and their ability to provide for their families. You know, and what you're going to hear your lawmakers say is that this is strictly a Biden situation. But we know of, and we have proof, that there are employers in this state who were implementing vaccine mandates for COVID long before Biden came out with his rules and mandates. So this is not just a Biden issue, although he's getting the most press. There are situations in our state where it happened before that even came down.
Exactly. And the other thing that really troubles me is that I was listening to Senator Stutz on another radio station this morning, and he basically puts all the eggs in the Fed basket by saying, as long as the Feds are going to be doing something, our hands are tied. And, I mean, to my way of thinking, that is just really, you know, wrong thinking, because we've already, as you said, we all know, we've already seen people losing their jobs that have nothing to do with federal employment or linkage through contracts and all the rest of that. These are just employers who don't want to have people who are not vaccinated. And I think the irony of all this vaccine business is that with breakthrough cases, those of us who have been vaccinated have become infected. So how is it that only the unvaccinated are in this position? I mean, in the end, everyone who either is vaccinated or not vaccinated is a possible spreader. So what the hell are they going to do?
Mm-hmm.
That's a rhetorical question.
Other,
I mean, you know, but it's frustrating.
Sorry. Two other problems with SB9 three actually. SB9, Senator Chris Elliott's bill, does not have any penalties built into his bill for anybody who violates the new law. So you have people who are already violating federal law when it comes to the application, implementation, and administration of religious and medical exemptions according to federal law. Now you have a state law that they're also going to just go ahead and violate because there's no penalties associated with it whatsoever. The second problem with it is SB9 is COVID-19 specific. So if we have 2 years down the road a situation where Fauci has come up with another pandemic and they want to implement mass mandates like they're doing now, this bill will not apply to any future pandemics or future situations that we may see coming down the pipe. The third issue is there is something called a sunset clause on Senator Elliott's bill. So on May 1st of 2023, this bill will cease to be in effect. It'll just go away unless it's extended by the legislature.
Yeah, and I mean, who's to say that everything is going to be hunky-dory? I mean, they've let in all of these unvaccinated, some of whom are actually carrying the virus. These illegals on the border are going to be spreaders. And so the question of whether or not we're actually going to tamp this thing down by 2023 remains an open question. And it's certainly within the Democrats' interest to keep going with it, because the more they can keep fear of the pandemic spreading, then the more likely it's going to be that they can get all the mail-in ballots that they want, whether it's in 2022 or 2024. I mean, it's outrageous. So, well, listen, Stephanie, I really appreciate you coming on today. Thank you for your hard work and your understanding of the ins and outs of this. I think that if you could just write a nice article in the newspaper, it would be very helpful for people to understand exactly what's happened, and it would allow people to see exactly the failures that are attendant to the present bill that is in effect. So, Stephanie, thank you again. Oh, Lori has a quick question.
Thank you, Dr. Liu. Actually, we have that written up already on our website. If your listeners will go to healthfreedomalabama.com, there is a tab right there that has a second special session on it. And okay. If they click it, they can go down and see the write-up on exactly what happened with each of those bills that passed in special session, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and how it's going to affect them.
Oh, that's great. Thank you, Stephanie. So now you don't have to write an article. You've already done it. That's good news. Okay. I know you're too busy with all your children and all the other stuff you're doing. So, but thank you again. Thank you for all you've done, and we will be in touch. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And that is healthfreedomalabama.com. Healthfreedomalabama.com.
Well, Lori, another, here it is, 10:35 according to my clock. Maybe your clock is showing 10:20, okay? No,
time
not today.
Time flies.
Well, I mean, we did have daylight savings, so there, I'm still kind of getting used to.
It takes a while. You
know, but at any rate, so listen, folks, do go to healthfreedom.com, go to the Common Sense Campaign website, take a look at what we're trying to do in terms of dealing with getting rid of Common Core, and we're hoping that the governor will take the resolutions that we have put together and act on them this coming Wednesday, the 10th of November, which happens to be the Marine Corps birthday, okay? So 246 years of service to the United States of America. This is an important week with all this business. So I urge you to stay engaged, pay attention to what's going on, and make those calls to the governor. And again, 334-242-7100.
334-242-7100. You are commonsensecampaign.org.
Exactly.
commonsensecampaign.org and healthfreedomalabama.com.
Okay. Thank you all. See you next week. Take care.
Thank you, Dr.
Happy
Lee.
Veterans Day, too.
Yes.
Oh, my goodness. I forgot about that. The 11th.
Yes.
The 11th hour, the 11th day of the 11th month of the year, 1918. Okay. All right. Y'all take care. Bye.
Thank you, Dr. Lou. You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomenosi, brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations on Highway 98 in Daphne, and in Malbus on 181 with a state-of-the-art car wash. If you missed part of the show or you want to tell a friend, you can listen to it later at WABF1480.com.